All right.
So apparently we're broadcasting now.
Evidently, which is good. You're having success. We had trouble in Barcelona, but we're here and it's working for the moment, we hope. We'll find out in the chat room. Anyway.
By the way, this is the BrianMadden.com podcast that you're listening to. Obviously, this is Jack and Gabe that brought us in here. We are with guests here, Sean Bass.
Hello.
And Jeroen van de Kamp.
Hello.
And the
he brought his radio voice.
I brought my radio voice. Yes.
This is your first time on the podcast.
This is the first podcast for me. So I started on my how do you call that? My movie trailer voice, so I can do really deep comments on the keynote.
In a world.
In a world. Yes.
Not a VM world though. No, Synergy world. No. So do we have any really bad SaaSify jokes to get out of the way before we get started?
Well, the SaaSification was
skip over that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Excellent. So. This is our regular Synergy post-keynote wrap-up show. And honestly, I figured the best way to go about taking care of all of the different stuff talked about was to follow along with Brian Madden's live blog, which he did while not here. He did this from San Francisco. He was, as we say in the U.S., playing hooky today.
Cool.
He was absent.
He was virtual.
He was virtual.
So he was work shifting.
Yeah.
Work shifting. Very nice. To use a term from 3 years ago at Citrix Synergy.
See? Bring it all back.
He did find a way yesterday to completely cock up the first panel by submitting
True.
A question
True.
At the Geek Speak Live. I guess let's start out with what sticks out to you. I mean, we can go in order, but in order is not necessarily the most interesting way to...
So my number one favorite part of the keynote was that it actually didn't go an hour over the time commitment.
Yeah. Yeah, you could see at the end, Mark was really trying to get
it
timed
like
properly.
3 minutes extra. That was awesome.
Something you're familiar with, right? Because you start your presentations at 50%,
yeah.
and then by the end, you're like, oh, shit, there's 10 minutes
left.
You
yeah.
just speed it up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very easy to fix. For me, the big standout was that the majority of announcements are tangible.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen so many keynotes talking about mobility, about new versions of Zen Desktop and stuff like that, but it was always far away on the horizon. And the major change, game change for me is that all the stuff we saw was all available within 2-3 months or tangible within 2-3 months.
I don't know if I clearly feel that same way because I mean Zen Client for Mac that was available on a wait.
No, Zen Player will be the tech.
Yeah,
but the stuff they spoke about today is actually available. So that's a big difference.
I think that this was a level setting thing this year because they got to the point where they were promising so much stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the big themes that we've all been talking about this past week in the meetings that we had earlier this week were Citrix has been promising all these things, but they haven't really delivered on them in the full way that everybody expects. And so even the mobile stuff, the demos that they showed for the work and the browser and share file were just rehashes of last year in Barcelona, except these are actual things now that people can do. Oh, and they've been renamed, which,
we get used to that. That's okay. Yeah.
No, I'm wondering, though, remember last year, last fall at VMworld was also kind of like level setting. We're going to do stuff now, and we were kind of I can't remember exactly, but we were probably pretty down on the keynote at the time then. Do we feel like the same way? Like, you know, it's level setting.
It was an arms race, and now it's over. We don't have to have enough nukes to blow up the other company.
I think it's really good, though, because, you know, if you look at some of the VMworld announcements that have made, you know, over the last 2 years or whatever, they've done a lot of vaporware, you know, launches.
A lot of announcements.
You know, Blast was talked about and then not delivered until substantially later.
Yeah.
And the Android, you know, dual persona virtualization thing was talked about and then not really delivered.
Hey, it's delivered as of last Wednesday.
Yes, on some phones, sometimes in certain circumstances, when the moon's aligned with Pluto.
Yeah, and when it doesn't make your phone run slow as shit.
Yeah. But, well.
So you're right, though. This was the year where I feel like there wasn't anything groundbreaking. Mark didn't have a one more thing at the end of the keynote. This was just, look at all this stuff that we promised you last year.
And
it's actually pretty much here right now.
No Gus Pinto.
And that is really a big difference for this one, for this event. I think, and that's a big, big thing.
Okay, so we can go home now?
Yes.
Yep. Let's go.
In summary, good.
Yeah. So if we do go in order a little bit, just because, I mean, you know, might as well start somewhere. They kicked off talking about cloud, which I fairly much just glossed over because, you know, it's the same message they've been talking about forever. In fact, when they talked about Zen Desktop 7, they didn't really talk about cloud that much. They just talked about the features of Zen Desktop 7. So even though this is kind of the next level of that whole Avalon framework that they mentioned last year in Synergy in the U.S. And continued in Barcelona, they really just focused on the features of Zen Desktop 7. So someone just walked by.
Yeah, really interesting. Yeah. What were you talking about?
Right.
Clouds, desktop?
Anyhow.
Yeah. Well, I think you shouldn't really be surprised when the thing that leads the keynote is going to be mobility and cloud, even though I think all of us can agree that a bulk of Citrix's profits are coming from ZenApp and Zen Desktop and Netscaler, and yet the headline of the keynote is mobility and cloud. But I think every company is doing that. They're trying to make sure that they are the market leader in the emerging spaces.
Mm-hmm. And so it's also about relevance and getting a foot in the doorstep, you know, because if you talk about VDI, nobody's getting really excited about VDI anymore. It's still a valid technology and many valid use cases.
Which, by the way, that is the dumbest thing in my mind, because we finally reached the point where VDI over the last
works.
5 years where VDI can work for 70 to 100% of the desktops in an enterprise, and now everyone's given up and moved on. And I think that's crazy.
No, I don't think it's given up, but the thing is, there's another problem, is there's no interest in Windows, but that's a different discussion because of Windows 8. But let's not
it's
move
just
there.
Not exciting.
Because, let's not move there right now. It was not in the top, in the keynote.
Hey, so I'm monitoring the chat room right now, so Brian says, what's the deal with ZenApp being 6.5 feature pack 2, but integrated with Zen Desktop 7? So are they one product or not?
That's as good a place to start as any.
Yeah.
So Zen Desktop 7, this has a lot of the features that we were talking about for Excalibur. This is essentially Excalibur. It also has Zen Desktop App Edition, which is essentially just a license that only allows you to publish applications via server-based or RDSH. Rather than get to full-on virtualized Windows desktops, or what is VDI desktops. We were briefed on this a while ago, and yet we still have many questions about it. Namely, what the hell is the difference? So we know from last year that the app edition of Zen Desktop 7 is going to be FMA-based. We know that
And a VDA as opposed to a whole software stack.
That's what I was going for.
So it's getting more lightweight. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you look back at what happened with 6.5, where they had the worker controller separation, that was about making it sort of lean and more enterprise scalable within ZenApp 6.5. And this is sort of the next step as well of putting a lighter weight stack and doing all the orchestration and management sort of in the controller model.
But will be the feature pack to also the last version of ZenApp?
Well, that's what I wonder. So ZenApp 7 did not come out.
Nope.
ZenApp 6.5 Feature Pack 2 is out, still IMA-based. Really, it's just a feature pack, so we've added a couple of features to the product.
Mostly upgrades to the protocol, that's it. Yeah.
But what then is the difference between the feature set of ZenApp 6.5 versus Zen Desktop App Edition?
Well, the way that I view this, and you know, the devil's in the details, we'll have to find out more as time goes on, because this is all just announced now, and whether or not we know some specifics, you know, we can or can't talk about right now. But my point being is that if you look at the history of ZenApp and Zen Desktop, there has been a constant amount of leapfrog being played by these products. So you'd oftentimes had different teams developing things for Zen Desktop versus ZenApp, and so you'd have some new feature that would come out in one or the two products, like flash redirection or link integration or whatever, and it was a while before the other product had it. So
it
I don't view this as being any
even.
Different. It's, you know, Zen Desktop 7 is getting the most emphasis because the FMA architecture was already in existence, and so they're going to onboard the RDSH stuff in the simplest way possible, but there's definitely not going to be feature parity behind ZenApp 6.5 and the App Edition in Zen Desktop, but that will come down the road.
Yeah, feature parity is the goal.
I think it's the goal, but also if you look at it from a technical point of view, it should not be too difficult, because just the protocol stack is not completely fundamentally tied into
Except for the fact that going from the full-blown ZenApp architecture to the VDA is pretty substantial, so it will take them time to integrate that code. But I agree
with
you.
Not an easy step to get to this.
So we have a question from the chat room. What about VDI in a box?
No,
yeah, what
a
about
single
that?
Mention of that.
Yeah, so
it doesn't make complete sense to why is there still a use case?
It's a political thing in my mind. Right. I mean, the way that people get compensated for it from a field perspective is a lot of what drives people's excitement or motivation to push the technology. And I think until Citrix alters the way that they treat the field sales
you know, opportunities for reading out of box versus Zen Desktop, this is going to continue to be sort of the ugly redheaded stepchild.
But we've been asking for some sort of consolidation with some of the simplicity of VDI in a box, maybe trying to forklift that into Zen App and that, or Zen Desktop. That has not happened. There's been no indication of that happening.
Well, from my perspective, I think where VDI in a box can really shine in an organization is either that low barrier to entry to get virtual desktops up and running without a lot of complexity, because obviously Zen Desktop is a very complex product.
I think without a lot of seated experience.
But I think the other positioning for VDI in a box that I think you're going to start to see long-term things move in this direction, it makes perfect sense. If I have to do distributed VDI, because my WAN links aren't going to accommodate large numbers of virtual desktop people coming over the remoting protocol, and I want to do distributed VDI architecture, trying to build Zen Desktop in 15 sites in a company that's dispersed throughout the globe, you're talking about trying to do HA for the database, HA for the brokers, you know, all these kinds of things, and it's incredibly expensive and complex to manage. VDI in a box could be that I drop in a box, I got the virtual desktops, I point my users to it, and then I go to the next site, and literally cookie cutter and stamp them out throughout the environment.
Brian's always wondered, and he posted here in the chat room, he always wondered if Citrix just bought Caviza to shut them up.
Or perhaps get them so that someone else doesn't acquire them.
Yeah. And
because like VMware, as an example, does not have a solution similar to VDI in a box. And there's other players like Nimdesk and that kind of stuff.
But you talk about VMware being not similar to VDI in a box, but people regard VMware as way
the
more easier.
Solution. Yeah.
And if you look at if you look at the State of the Union survey, by far the majority of small implementations, VDI implementations, are Vue, and the big implementations are Zen Desktop. So it does have, actually we didn't ask for VDI.
Well, you can plug all you want, my friend.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think part of that is probably due to the fact that VMware was the market creator of this technology. They, you could say terminal services predated VDI, and that's fine, VMware established the VDI market,
sure.
So they created that. So they were the first market player to do it, so that's one thing. I think secondly, there's a whole lot of customers, given that VMware owns the server vert market, it was a very easy transition to say, hey, here's a new license, we're bundling some things together, here you go. So of course it makes sense to me that the early adopters and getting things bundled makes a lot of sense people would go to that.
I got the sensation when I look at Zen Desktop 7 and the first time, it's so far simplified. They really did manage to simplify it. Is there also the use case before, apart from setting up autonomous multiple small sites? Still, if you look at simplicity, because that's the major selling point for VDI in a box, I think with Zen Desktop perhaps become a competitor for VDI in a box in many ways to many organizations.
I think the thing that they're missing is the sort of the grid architecture and scale out of model.
It would be interesting if they take that technology that is cool about VDI in a box and integrate it further into Zen Desktop 7. Don't know if that's feasible and possible.
Well, I think when you look at Citrix, over the years, it's not been very uncommon for them to have more than one product competing in the exact same space. I mean, you look at what happened with the Net6, CAG versus the NetScaler, AG Enterprise.
Ultimately, it doesn't hurt, it's divide and conquer. And
well, eventually, the best part of the point of it is at some point in time, you have to discard your duplication of effort because the platform behind VDI Box is completely different than Zen Desktop. So you've got teams developing features for two different things.
I know.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Kumar in the chat room, who I assume was Kumar Goswami from Caviza back in the day. So he says, what do you expect for the future of VIAB? It looks like the wizard stuff that they showed today for Zen Desktop 7 is sort of based on VIAB in concept. So maybe they are borrowing a little bit out of there. I mean,
my question would be how much of that is borrowing, how much of it is redeveloping equivalent features? My guess is redeveloping.
Because who knows how easy it is to just cut and paste that code. So, all right. So enough VDI in a box, and I guess we can put a bow on the Zen App 6.5 and Zen Desktop 7 App Edition just by saying there is a difference. We don't know what it is, and so for the foreseeable future, there will be a lot of people still on Zen App 6.5, mainly because the architecture is so different and the feature set is.
Well, I've been thinking, would it be a business driver to move into Zen Desktop 7? If you're now on Zen App 6,
there is not, because the license what we know of the license is that you are entitled to use Zen App if you buy Zen Desktop.
Sure, right. But so we already know that for Zen Desktop.
So there's not even a technical reason.
Are you asking is there a reason to move from Zen Desktop 5.6 to Zen Desktop 7 or from Zen App 6.5 to Zen Desktop 7?
Zen App 7. Zen App.
Yeah. And I would say at this stage there probably is no market driver or whatever, unless you're really trying to simplify architectures and not have redundant environments. But
I believe mostly for new environments. If you already are up and running, there's no real driver to just upgrade underneath architecture.
Yeah. I think the feature parity is what's going to leave Zen App 6.5 trailing behind for a long time. Zen Desktop 7 itself, I could definitely see people moving to, particularly for the massive improvements in HDX. I mean, that's a massive driver in my mind.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Any idea of Zen Desktop app pricing and positioning? I don't think that that's been talked about in any way.
Well, one thing I did learn in the keynote is I heard the word edition about 8,000 times. So yeah, I got
holy
a little...
Shit. Yeah. There's, I mean, Zen Mobile has editions and desktops. Yeah, yeah, it's
I was
crazy.
Actually still waiting for double platinum edition that would cover yeah. both products.
Or
in one,
or
know,
the
special,
edition edition. Yeah, no,
yeah, yeah. A special gold record version. Yeah.
How many times have we asked, too, like, what products or what features should be in which editions of Zen Desktop?
Yeah.
And
although I think, your own edition.
I think to some degree, Citrix does listen, because I know personally I have been saying for some time, you know, AppDNA would be fantastic if it was bundled into Zen App or Zen Desktop Platinum, and now we're seeing the emergence of that. So that's nice. It's not the full product, but it's...
Oh, there's one more feature I want to discuss also, because Reverse Seamless is now officially available.
Yes.
And the first CTP meeting, I can remember that you and I were like trashing Citrix.
And this oh, I was facepalming that whole meeting.
Yeah. This was in 2009 or something, right? 2008.
Longer ago. It was the first CTP meeting,
Because it was a CSP-only feature, which to me was like, wow, who was asleep at the wheel when they decided that one?
But and so this is one of those things that they've been trying to find a reason to include it in the product for so long. And they, for some reason, for whatever reason, have not found a way to either monetize it or justify putting it in there, despite the fact that it has existed for so long. And that other vendors have that out there. That was Ericom's big thing was, hey, look, PowerTerm has Reverse Seamless in it.
Yeah, that was really a res thing for the most part.
It was a res thing because they hold the patent and they enforce the patent. So I know for a fact that Citrix had it in the works for such a long time, but they hold off because
Project
of the patent.
Project Alice, way back when. Yeah.
So I wonder if they, if they reworked that or if they've just come to some agreement with RES or they just don't give a damn.
They did get agreements.
Licensing agreement.
Yeah. So, all right. So, good to see that. Talked about Zen App. Two consoles now. Do you believe that?
Well, I guess that assumes you're not using PBS because it's the third console.
Yeah.
I guess I've moved past the console thing. Like, that used to be like a serious bit of frustration for me, but now I'm just like, whatever.
Now it's just a joke that, you know, whatever, Citrix, you're good at consoles.
I gotta say, Mark's got a great sense of humor to bring that up, like clearly like a sarcastic thing, like, oh, we got two consoles now.
But is it really worthwhile to make a big fuss out of it? You know,
it's
better than 12.
I'll tell you, and that looked really awesome. The director demo that they showed up.
Well, I tweeted, and I do truly believe this, Desktop Director is one of the best things Citrix has done in the last few years.
It's amazing. I haven't seen EdgeSight in a while, so I saw that. That had to be a reskinning of EdgeSight.
That sort of
right?
made me throw up in my mouth when I saw EdgeSight stuck on a director. I was like, oh, God, please no.
We knew that was coming because they talked about it last year, but the multiple application deployment thing, publishing thing, that was pretty slick where you just select all your applications in I think they just picked a folder, right? And then it found the applications in there. And
well,
then
and let's be honest, like, you know, that made some of that technology made its appearance as early as ZenApp Fundamentals.
Sure.
So, like, when you did ZenApp Fundamentals, it would query the start menu and you know, you just do check boxes, whatever. And I remember when we first saw that feature, the CTPs were sitting in the room going, oh my God, why is this not in ZenApp? Like, you could save the admin so much time.
And it's been a scriptable thing. People have been doing this for a
while. I think for many of us, you know, in the industry are automating this. So for them, it's not a big issue. But the reality is this is a feature that we really wanted to, but Citrix is not making money off a feature of this. Yeah. So that's why it took so long. Because it's not a revenue generator.
I don't think they're making any money now either, but maybe they had some free dev cycles.
Yeah.
They weren't working so hard to deliver on some far-out technology that they promised last year, so they had dev cycles to dedicate to things like this.
Now, while we're talking about that, because that app publishing thing definitely highlighted the tight coupling with AppV. Like, there was a lot of, like, you know, we're all in on AppV. This is great technology. Yeah. So
they never said we're out of Citrix streaming, application streaming, right?
However, Twitter just blew the F up
and
said that Citrix has all but...
And I think everybody knew this. Like, I remember discussing this with Joe Nord, who at the time was the PM of App Streaming.
Yeah.
And I said, like, seriously, how long are you guys going to do this? Because, you know, now that the AppV CAL is bundled into the RDS CAL, like, what, you know, aside from doing the desktop use case, how can you continue to invest in this if people aren't going to use it?
Just a quick comment on this. There are still plenty of organizations. They are still third. In the State of Union survey, they are third when it comes to application virtualization solutions. So AppV, TinApp, 1 and 2, and then comes Citrix Steam.
But my question in that regard is it because it's necessarily a good product, or is it because it was bundled and free, and so people use what they
had?
How
can anyone say, is it because it's a good product? That's a different story. But I think it solves problems. You know, for some people, it solves problems.
And arguably, AIE even solved problems, but that got ripped from the product.
Well, the thing is, so back when you had to have MDOP to have AppV, that was a challenge. And so...
Yep. MDOP.
The
MDOP.
Desktop, MDOP. Yeah, MDOP. All right. So anyway, back when you had to have MDOT, then that was something that was just free and available to you if you did not have MDOT for your desktop.
Well, it's not free, let's be clear.
No, it's not free, no.
MDOT is definitely not
free. Oh, no, no, I meant Citrix ZenApp Streaming.
Oh, Citrix Streaming.
Was included with your, right.
Oh, yeah.
So, but is there any technical reason to use ZenApp Streaming?
No.
Zero.
Is there any advantage? Can it virtualize? Can it do some app that AppV cannot?
No. They are the furthest behind in terms of feature capabilities and performance.
Okay. Performance overhead.
Yeah.
So kill it off then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. It makes perfect sense.
Thumbs down. All right.
There we go.
So we've got some mobile stuff on the list too.
Did we get to desktop player yet?
Right. So we've got desktop player.
Poor Jack's sitting over here thinking blah 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 desktop bird blah blah blah.
So desktop player, did you know about this ahead of time?
No.
I didn't know about it. Did you know about it?
No, it was a complete surprise.
I emailed Parine, who is the community leader. I forget what her actual title is, but she's our go-to person for the CTP group. And I said, why didn't we know about this? And she said that we did, but I apparently was not there, and neither was anybody else I've talked to.
Yes, so all anyway, CTPs must have gone to the bathroom during that session.
So desktop player is a Type 2 client hypervisor. For the Mac, I believe only, right?
Based on VirtualBox is what I'm hearing?
That's all the rumors. Actually, that was confirmed. So it
okay.
is a, yeah.
Okay.
So based on
which
a licensed copy of VirtualBox, or licensed edition of VirtualBox, designed basically as a Zen client, a way to use Zen client.
I'm calling it Zen client.
Max. It's manageable by Zen client. I don't know to what extent.
Yeah.
But this is the idea, is to get Zen client on the Max, because for how many years we've wanted Zen client to run natively, and that for various reasons will not. It can happen, but it won't for
Apple
legal or
reasons, yeah.
So now there is an actual Mac solution from Citrix for running virtual Windows desktops on a Mac, as opposed to using VMware Fusion or Parallels or Mocha 5, that sort of thing.
I don't know. I have many questions about it. Are we now, for the Mac, do we need to create a separate image? Because it's VirtualBox. And it's the same.
Being that's managed by Zen client, it should be
It's managed by Zen
delivered.
Client.
As long as the agent, the tools, have the drivers built in, it should probably be okay. I caught some crap from Simon Crosby on Twitter for wondering why they use VirtualBox as opposed to Zen. Like, maybe Zen
because
is
it's
not
free.
Compatible. But you would think Zen is free to them, too.
But Zen's Type 1.
That's what I suggested. And Simon says that he indicated that I don't have the full story there. So I want to find out from him. Pete Downing is the PM for this, so we're going to go track down Pete, too.
So I got a question on this. My question is this a competitive play to say we can compete with Mocha 5, or is it a competitive play to compete against Winova? Because my opinion is Winova.
No. That's weird, because Winova is not a hypervisor at all.
Correct.
That's
in Fusion.
You can combine Fusion. It's a bundled feature of Vue that you can use Fusion, and you can deliver a managed VM by Winova.
I know.
The same feature set.
So to me, to be honest, I don't know what the long-term play is, because that's exactly my thoughts. Is this just a marketing play, like the checkbox? We have this too. Or is it truly a product and a thing that they really want to progress and move on to on long-term? Also because it's based on VirtualBox. I have no clue where it's going.
Yeah.
But to me, for right now, it feels like they need to have the checkbox. That they're not out of competitive analysis. Because do you really, really want to do VMs on Macs and stuff like that?
Well,
there are some use cases.
I was super excited to hear that, at least what I'm understanding, again, hearing about this the first time an hour ago, I don't know the details, but I was super excited to hear that this is going to be managed by Zen Client, because it makes me think that there's going to be some drive towards unification of image management.
Yeah.
What makes me sad, though, is there's absolutely zero unification of image management between classic Zen Desktop, PBS, MCS, Zen Client. I mean, it's all still completely disparate, no unification.
And that's what really the magic would be happening.
Yes, I think
sure.
from a features perspective of what I'd like them to work on, that's like number one.
There's a lot of discussion.
For sure that Vue with Vue is driving this. They really want to have the image management, because I really
feel... Hence the Winova acquisition.
But I really feel it's not competing with Winova, it's competing with Fusion. That's the story, because Winova is just...
Fusion has, unlike VMware Ace, Fusion doesn't have a direct VM synchronization solution. They used to have offline VDI, but that you're bringing the whole VM down
that's
and topping
right.
the whole VM back up.
And that's as
and that's where
as
Winova, even though it's agent-based in the Windows VM, can actually help a lot, because now you're synchronizing deltas.
But this is interesting, because for me, Winova is not about doing client-side hypervisor. For me, Winova is just
an image
management,
management
layer for Windows desktops and laptops.
But who knows if Citrix is starting to use the personal vDisks and all of that stuff, that they can compose that VM, that VM that's running on Zen Client. the desktop layer,
right,
then perhaps there's some element of the Winova feature set on the Citrix side. I still don't know if people are asking
what
for
I,
that or
what
not.
I think is powerful about Winova, and everyone like kind of glosses over this, but they had this in the original product prior to acquisition, and that is you got a laptop in the field, the laptop gets destroyed, like you know, Henrik poured his cup of coffee on his machine, whatever. Because the CVD is backed up in the data center, you can restore that to a VM and have the person connect back in from any endpoint a matter of an hour or two later.
Yeah.
That's incredibly powerful.
Yeah, it is. And I think, but if you look at the Winova proposition, it's also the layered approach and stuff like that. Still, we're wondering if that is really going to work in the real world. But for me, if you look at Winova, by far the use case for Winova is laptops out there, real normal laptops.
That's the low-hanging fruit.
No client hypervisor is not involved at all.
And actually, there's benefit to that.
Yeah.
The key benefit is you get 100% bare metal performance.
Yeah.
There is no hypervisor getting in the way.
But I want to get track back to one statement you did. I just want to reimburse this, is that it sucks so bad that there is no unified image management within Citrix, because that's where the magic really starts to happen. And Citrix will not be able to do this, and with Winova, for sure, they will be able to synchronize your broken laptop and pop it and populate a VM
and
immediately access it. And that is
because it's
a little
the Windows
bit
level, not the VM level, so they can execute
any container. And I have some major frustration in this regards, because going back to probably 3 years ago in the CTP group, I was hammering them on this, please do unified image management. I know it's a difficult thing, but you've got to do it.
And this has made it harder.
Is there any path there for them?
I think the problem is they got to start doing some consolidations, and maybe now that MCS is supported for Zenapp, this is going to start lead towards PVS getting phased out, which I know upsets a lot of people, but I think PVS has a dead future.
Yeah.
Because honestly, all the storage acceleration solutions that are being created today, and hypervisor integration and software-based storage.
So Citrix should buy Ilio, Atlantis.
Oh God, that would make it so much easier.
That would be so smart.
That would be that would be something.
Well, now that VMware owns Versto, maybe they'd be more inclined to be pushed that direction.
Yeah.
Not that Versto is a competitor to Atlantis. It's a completely different thing, but, you know.
You know, if you ask Versto, they say they're a competitor to Atlantis.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Course.
Okay, so the last thing before we get to the mobility stuff, Jack's getting edgy over there, is NVIDIA. Holy shit.
Yeah. Awesome, wasn't it?
Those were some amazing demos.
Yeah.
So we know a fair amount about this going into it. Mainly because we've talked to the NVIDIA guys and been briefed a bunch of times. This demo that they did, they showed dedicated GPUs on virtual desktops, and they showed really awesome things. Like, what app was the Audi RTT being manipulated in?
Yeah, that's the app.
The 3D visualizer for the people that haven't seen the keynote. That's a 3D visualizer for cars. Many car brands use it. So there was a nice Audi R8, 3D being swiped. You could see the
light sources on the paint. It was something.
But I think people trivialize how complex that multiple light source reflection kind of thing is. You know, if you look at some of the more advanced things that have happened in DirectX 11 with tessellation and that kind of stuff, like these effects just blow your mind. It's things that was not possible, 2 to 3 years ago.
And things that you cannot do on your $400, $800 desktop that you bought at Best Buy either. I mean, this is stuff that requires some serious processing.
You can do a lot.
You can do a lot on the traditional GeForce cards in terms of capabilities.
Oh, well, you have to buy the cards. But if you're buying something with like an integrated
chip. Of course, anything
video,
that's IGP, you're never going to get that level of performance.
Yeah. But the other demo, the one that blew me away, because I'm used to using Premiere, was the fact that they were editing a 4K resolution video.
Yeah.
And they were doing real-time effects changes. And I'm looking at Justin, and I'm like, you would love this so much. Because being able to, they were adding a blur to this thing in real time while this video is playing, a 4K video, and this is all happening on the fly.
So what was the one use case that I explained that you will never ever do on virtual desktops? Video editing.
And that's exactly what they can do now.
But to be honest, there's one aspect that we forgot and was sincerely just as impressive, was also doing the same using Grid on an iPad using Photoshop. You have to imagine that the graphics power of an iPad and the engine and the HDX engine, how this is displayed on the iPad.
Yeah.
The smoothness of it all is rather dramatic. I found it super impressive to see the graphics performance on an iPad was that good.
So they're giving a demo of the Photoshop stuff. I saw this at the NVIDIA booth last night, and I think that they have some other stuff that they now can show today. the Photoshop thing, they were doing actual zoom, you know, so there's, you can do the step zooms in Photoshop, but you can also just kind of move the, you can scroll in and out to do that. So they were showing that via an HDX connection, and it just looked amazing. They were doing the rotation, 3D rotations and stuff within Photoshop.
But you got to question the viability of using an iPad to do these types of things.
And
of
iPad, not so much.
Of course.
It's a nice parlor trick. It's not really a functional, usable thing.
I think
thing,
this is an interesting discussion, because I completely agree. You're not productive. You're not going to set up a super complicated 3D painting or job in iPad. However, I am looking now how Citrix is continuously innovating the use Windows application on the iPad. Where do we come at a point it becomes actually usable? It actually becomes user-friendly. I saw yesterday in a CTP meeting one of our CTP colleagues working in Visio on his iPad, and he was able to do it, you know? So
do you have a mouse?
I think the Bluetooth mouse on iOS is the single thing that kills it. If Apple added Bluetooth mouse on iOS, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
Agreed, but still, to see how Citrix is evolving this, because you don't want to carry a keyboard and a mouse with you. And just with Windows applications are step by step, little steps, but they become more usable with every step they take. It's impressive.
From my perspective, you know, based on what you just said, if I had access to a monitor, keyboard, and mouse somewhere that I could connect in to an iPad and to a larger display with a keyboard and mouse, and that all worked with iOS, I might actually contemplate not carrying a laptop around a lot of the time.
Because
I would literally use a virtual desktop a lot more often than I do today.
There's a discussion there that involves Android mini PCs too, which Brad Peterson demoed. I am firmly in the camp of, I hate these damn things.
But Dell's had the Ophelia, is that the code name?
I'm going to go check it out. ViewSonic has one here as well. Everybody I'm talking to said, you got to come check these out. So I guess I'll go with an open mind and see what these things look like. I mean, I can be swayed.
Matchboxes.
My challenge there, ViewSonic has an actual all-in-one 24-inch unit. I get that use case a little bit better than I get the mini PC Ophelia use case. I don't know, what did Brad have on stage? Did he have the Dell?
I don't know who's
up. So this, carrying this thing around and then carrying a keyboard and carrying a mouse with you, all to run an OS that was not designed to run on that platform, calling it a work and play solution to run. If you wanted to play games or a play sort of scenario on these devices that were made to be touched and made to be on a 10-inch screen or a 5-inch screen, you can't just put that on a TV in front of you
And the counter argument, of course, is, you know, if you've got high-speed USB 3, Mocha 5's got a solution for carrying around your entire portable system. You can plug into a system and use a player application with that. Windows to go, all these kind of things. There's many other solutions that would give you additional capabilities beyond what a thin client, you know, device would use.
And that's just it. I'm still carrying my laptop. I'm still carrying my tablet. So what the hell do I need another one for? NVIDIA stuff. So we talked about the first part of the NVIDIA demo. This was with a dedicated GPU. So the really big news, we had the dedicated GPU last year. Yeah. We did not get the awesome demo.
No.
The big news out of this show, though, is that now the GPU is virtualized. And now we can share that GPU across multiple Zen desktop sessions. And we can get some of the same functionality. We're not going to do 3D RTT graphics manipulations, and we're not going to do maybe editing 4K videos in Premiere. But we still get the Photoshop.
When you think about graphics, whether it's 2D, 3D graphics, whatever, you have to realize there's different tiers of users. There's your task worker, information worker guys that just need your very basic Aero, PowerPoint, you know, D3D animations, some of that, like very, very basic kind of stuff. Does not require a ton of GPU power.
Right.
And then you kind of move up into your more power users and your high-end graphics, CAD users, whatever. There's different use case scenarios where hardware pass-through one-to-one, giving a person an entire Kepler GPU to themselves and, you know, 3 to 6 gig of GDDR5 VRAM is what they're going to want.
Right.
You're not going to want to give them vGPU.
And these situations, this is a very niche use case, but this has been one of the ones that's excluded from virtual desktops for the last 15 years.
Right. I mean, pretty much all we've had is either hardware pass-through, which limits your scalability because you got to have, even if you have four GPUs in a box, you're only going to get four users on that virtualization host with Zen Server as for a PCI pass-through, or even vSphere, you know, 5.1 PCI pass-through. But if you want to start getting higher density, your only option is either to do hardware pass-through now with the ZenApp OpenGL sharing and D3D sharing, or you've got to do something like along the lines of what, you know, Microsoft did with Callista, or you know, VMware has their API intercept method now with Vue 5.2. But the problem is, and I say there's a lot of confusion in the graphics industry about what is the difference between hardware pass-through, API intercept, vGPU, and all these kind of things, because each vendor has a different approach, and the capabilities that each one exposes is drastically different. If you want high-end performance, you have to do hardware pass-through, or now that vGPU is available from NVIDIA, where you're actually getting the real NVIDIA driver, where every version of OpenGL, every version of DirectX is going to be supported, and you have the actual driver from NVIDIA loaded inside the VM. That's completely different from all these other GPU virtualization and API intercepts
certain levels
that have very lower levels of OpenGL. And there's no serious graphics you can do on OpenGL 1.1 or 2.1. It's fairly limited.
And this is all being remoted to us with that and the combination of HDX, which is where the iPad thing came in that you were talking about, because that is not just HDX, this is HDX Mobile with the enhancements that they've added for that.
I think Citrix didn't do enough to really talk about, you know, the super codec piece that's in Excalibur, and I think they should have spent more time talking about that. I realize they were limited time, and NVIDIA had a big spot that they were coming out and talking, but there's a substantial HDX investment that I think some more good news is going to come out of that.
Yeah, I don't know what they've actually talked about or what they're talking about right now, but we'll go in there and see what they're talking about and disclose what we can from the show.
I'm sure that more than likely someone on the HDX team's got a session here at Synergy. I've not looked at the program guide, but I'm guessing there's a session here on that.
All right. Jack, wrap mobility for us.
Okay, what I said, wrap. So this was the first show, since they bought Zen Prize at the end of last year. It was going to be interesting to see how they put together the whole package on that, and sort of, you know, they said, okay, here's MDM, here's a very standard MDM demo. They did using the configuration profiles to install and remove apps from an iPhone, and then sort of went into the mobile app management stuff like they talked about it before in Barcelona. What I know is, when they told that story around mobile app management in Barcelona, I was really excited because it's like they really get the message, they really get the dual persona idea, and they put it together in such a great
way. And then they bought an MDM.
I mean, and that's that's perfectly okay, and it just seemed not quite the energy and excitement.
The message has changed too, because at the time in Barcelona, Citrix was about the applications and the data, the end, and device be damned, we can do anything. And now all of a sudden it's, we can do devices too, so you should care about them now.
And that
makes sense.
I think you've got to keep in mind, Citrix is trying to be all things to all customers. When customers have demand and say, we need this. So a big customer comes to Citrix and says, we need MDM.
Yeah.
You got to fill the gap, or you got to have another competitor take that market.
It does make complete sense to me, because they didn't have a play in it truly in the MDM field. And to be honest, what I see around is that I work for a consulting firm, and I see all the consultants being excited, I see customers being excited, and they have real, real traction here. They have real, real traction. And ultimately, you have to do a lot of education, but everybody starts the whole mobility discussion with MDM. So you can say, well, we have this, and then they can work it up. So the vision of MAM and MIM, the stuff that, and actually it's cool to see it at the keynote, that the stuff, again, is available. That's also a big difference to me.
So this is maybe a conversation to have. There are a few things that I want to say first, but like that mobile discussion, and this is the conversation that I wanted to get to last night, is, now that we have MAM and MDM, all together from all the same companies, do we start it at the MDM place? And, a lot of people think that maybe we could start that conversation in a different place. But I think, that's the argument that I wanted to have last night, but before we get to that argument, there are a few other questions to clear up. Like, we noticed when they were doing that MDM demo, first, that Works Enroll app, which is just, that's the app that you go log in to get the profile delivered down to your phone, and it's basically like any other MDM agent app. But then there was that Works Home app, and so that was showing, the App Store functionality, but was that... Does that replace Citrix Receiver, or
so? I think that's the part that there's a lot of debate about, because obviously the Works Home solution is clearly tied to the Zen Mobile solution. However,
but
you can definitely see
tied
overlap.
To receiver back.
Right.
Yeah.
So you can see overlap between what the classic Receiver, Green Bubbles UI used to do for storefront and delivery of applications, going all the way back to the, what was their silly project code name for that everyone hated?
Oh, geez.
I'm forgetting it now. It's a really dumb name.
Not Dazzle. It was Dazzle.
So it's sort of that, the evolution of that. But where I'm concerned is that, you know, receivers playing some of that functionality today in a non-Zen Mobile world, and now you have the Works Home providing that role in the mobile world, and clearly those two need to converge.
Yeah.
Because it's silly to have them separate.
Because they were showing this functionality inside Receiver last year in Barcelona, and now this stuff has been forklifted over into the Works...
Works Home.
Works Home thing.
Yeah,
But this, I guess, has something to do with the Cloud Gateway shift to Cloud Bridge, and all of a sudden...
Well, Cloud Gateway doesn't exist anymore, but it's part of the Zen Mobile solution now.
Right. So, Citrix did a bunch of reorganizing, it sounds like, and so...
And Cloud Bridge is separate, though. Cloud Bridge is the evolution of Branch Computer WAN Scaler.
Understood, but so it's really hard to call... When you say the Cloud Gateway gets merged to Cloud Bridge, it's really hard to say, well, there's still Cloud Gateway Enterprise with this functionality then. Because didn't they say that the Cloud Gateway stuff was merged into Cloud Bridge and then Cloud Bridge?
I didn't think it was part of Cloud Bridge. Cloud Bridge is Branch Repeater WAN Scaler.
Yeah. Okay. I thought there was some other combination going on as well.
No.
Okay.
Not that I know of.
All right.
But this Works Home versus Citrix Receiver thing.
I think that's a huge marketing mistake. Absolutely a huge marketing mistake. A, because Receiver, I think people got. No. It resonated.
I think I understand why they do it. Because Citrix already has a place in the Citrix world, and Receiver is well received in the Citrix world. But they want to get out to other customers that don't want to have the feeling that they get the classic Citrix architecture. So that's why they have a separate app, a separate naming for this product. So they don't have that typical Citrix ring to it. Oh, it's Citrix Receiver. Oh, you should have sent it.
But here's the problem. Customers are going to go to the App Store to get this thing,
yeah,
and they're going to search for Works, WRKS, and they're not going to find it because it's got this goofy name.
I agree with the naming.
Arguably, you could probably search for Citrix and find it, but the question is, are people going to associate this Works Home as being what they need to get to? And granted, I realize if you do the enroll app, maybe that solves that dilemma.
Yeah, puts that there, yeah.
But that's assuming that you're managing an iOS device. And,
to be clear, too, the app, so Works Home, Works Web, Works Mail, these things replace the at work stuff.
And I wonder, is this a patent thing? Like, there's a company that has at work, and that's why they have to avoid that?
I asked that in one of the meetings that we had, and I was one of the reasons that they gave, one of the primary reasons.
It was confusing on Twitter.
It wasn't a Twitter-friendly name.
But at work, I think, made a lot of sense. I would have rather seen it called, you know, at work being the portal name.
Yeah.
And not this Works Home, because it just...
Works Home is... a company where marketing rules.
Yeah. And Works Home means that you can work.
Yeah.
At home.
And, oh, wow.
But that also, to me, conjures up the stupid Facebook home thing that makes me just...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh. Every once in a while, Citrix pulls something out, like Receiver for Facebook.
That was fantastic. Thank God that never went anywhere.
I forget what the tweets were. I need to go back and look, because those were amazing. Yeah.
So the announcements, regardless of the confusion...
October 10th must be April Fool's Day in Spain. That's...
That person just won the internet.
Yeah, that was me.
So the announcement was now. So you have a Zen Mobile MDM edition, Zen Mobile App edition, which is all the mobile app management stuff, and Zen Mobile Enterprise, which is both of those together. So, you know, perfect. Pick which ones you need.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some confusion there, but it makes sense because you got to keep in mind that the Cloud Gateway Enterprise piece is not only the MAM piece that I think most of us are probably interested in, but it's also the SaaS, you know, single sign-on piece.
Yeah.
So if you're using a lot of SaaS-based applications, there's value, I think, in that app edition, even if you're not using, you know, the full suite, if you're not interested in doing all
that. The app edition is just that you want to get in, even though you already have an MDM solution in there. It doesn't matter if you have mobile R and AirWords, whatever. At least you can get Zen Mobile App Edition, because that's fully complete.
Sure.
The problem is there's when you do that, see, the key will be how exactly they... You know, there are a lot of interesting things that you can do when you incorporate device knowledge from... that gained from a device using MDM and incorporate that into app management policies. So will that intelligence be in Zen Mobile Enterprise?
I think arguably it will be there. The question is, will it be as rich?
Yeah.
Is what you'd get with the agent.
And so continuing on, so how about share file? There was nothing new that they talked about that before, but they...
Well, no, there's some new stuff. So the SharePoint SharePoint integration with document editing, that's all brand new.
Yeah, I find it's actually pretty interesting to see that you can sign a PDF.
That's annotation.
The editing is really cool. Yeah.
But we've known about the editing for a couple of months now.
Yeah. Seen a demo and all of that. Yeah.
Right.
But
big screen, fancy lights.
You know, there was Twitter kind of lit up over that, which I think.
Well, the thing that I'm concerned about with the connection with SharePoint and the document editing, all that kind of stuff. The thing that I worry about is you've got overlap again between these products, because Cloud Gateway Enterprise is, of course, working on some things for connecting you to your file shares and connecting you to your SharePoint and that kind of stuff, and ShareFile has similar functionality overlap, and the question becomes, when does a customer buy ShareFile? Is it only when they want to do public document sharing, or when would they take that functionality in Cloud Gateway or what is now Zen Mobile Enterprise? Like, when would you pick one or the other is the question, because they're providing similar overlap functionality.
Isn't the document sharing capability in Zen Mobile Enterprise, isn't that just plugging in the ShareFile module?
You can do the on-premise data integration as well. So I guess it depends if you're interested in doing public exchange of documents or if you're only worried about the on-prem piece. If you're worried on the on-prem piece, you can use storage zone connectors and get that piece. But you could also, in the classic sense of Cloud Gateway Enterprise, you know, expose intranet sites and some of those kind of things and arguably get at your SharePoint through that. So I think there's going to be some discrepancies between what one can do that the other one can do. And I guess if a customer wants to go out and buy both, you know, does that make sense?
So, again, there's that messiness.
Yeah, exactly.
Deal with. The final part of the mobile part that he talked about was SDKs to develop mobile compatible apps and their ecosystem. Yeah. And this is, you know, this is an area that that I happen to be very passionate about.
to say the least.
Only because you have to spend a ridiculous amount of time trying to discern the vendors and the SDKs from one another.
Yeah, yeah. So this is where, you know, they mentioned 60 partner developers with 80 apps out there. So that's a really good start, and you know we're like they're clearly hot on the tail, if not surpassing good technology and good dynamics. They also mentioned that storefront of available apps, and I tweeted asking if those were publicly available apps or if they were apps that you had to download and sign yourself to distribute. And
yeah, so I think the download and sign yourself thing is certainly an option. It's going to be a requirement if you're doing like your own enterprise app store internally. Yeah.
And Citrix is open to doing it both ways.
Right. And yeah. I think that's the key thing is that, you know, they're doing both things. They're taking the good approach of an SDK that any ISV can take the SDK, compile it into their app, and they have a choice as the developer to either put out two different copies of an app or to embed the code and simply just have it not used when it's used on a device that doesn't have the capabilities to expose the injected code. So I think it's going to be up to each individual ISV if they really want to maintain two code bases, you know, one with the Zen Mobile SDK and one without, because then obviously you're going to have leveling problems with the code. You're going to update it here and not update it there. There's going to be some ugliness there. There's other ISVs
with different SDKs too. So,
right. So there's going to be a good version, there's going to be a Zen Mobile version.
Or unless there is one that they can just bake all of the SDKs into, which, you know, you just doubled your app size. Congratulations.
Well, that's the problem.
Wouldn't you expect that this would be more used on the enterprise level that they develop their own mobile apps? Because the SDK is specific, you know.
That's already happening.
Yeah, it's already happening. Yeah. And I think that's where they really get also a lot of traction.
Yeah.
Because you want to have, if you're developing a mobile app, you don't have any infrastructure for it. And with as a mobile, you have the infrastructure to manage the app.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, companies have been for a number of years now doing enterprise agreements where they can do redistribution of applications. Sure. And sometimes that can be public app store apps that you're signing volume purchase agreements with and distributing internally in your own app store. Or it could be an internally developed app that you're signing with an Apple Enterprise Developer Certificate and redistributing.
Yeah, that makes complete sense, but it is really nice that you also can own the infrastructure to manage the app and all around it. Yeah. So I think there's also a lot of interest there.
So now Gabe was mentioning the next question. We have the Citrix SDK, the good SDK, the Mobile Iron SDK, the semantic one. So this idea of the... there's a big long list. But you know, about 6 weeks ago, Mobile Iron started talking about this Open App Alliance.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? Like, is this going to be the one to succeed, or where and how these standards for mobile app management? Where are they going to come from? We don't know.
If the SDK is the same, what's the leg up that one company would have over another?
Well, it's all the
It's the capabilities that they expose and the functionality. But I think that the difficulty that I have with this is it's a great idea. Having some open standards that everyone could adhere to is going to be a great idea. The thing I would worry about it is that it go down the same path of some of the divergent paths around HTML5 and WebKit, and you know, Google's ditching WebKit now, and they're going with other things. Like, is it going to get some interest and then eventually just fizzle out? Or is no one going to jump on board because they're like, oh, this is a mobile iron initiative, you know, we're not going to use this?
Yeah, and but what if we think of it more in a consumer way? You know, like, look, we have Wi-Fi standards now. We have standards for all sorts of things.
Yeah. But there wasn't a long time ago.
Yeah,
it took a while for that to happen. But of course, they have some background in that area too.
So. Yeah. So I guess we can all agree that it would be a great thing to have happen. You know, Mobile Iron promised that they'd be making their formal announcement sometime. So the big question then will be if there are any other. You know, they said there will be partners, but are they going to be other ISVs or whatever, or is some other big MAM vendor going to be signed on as a partner when they make that announcement? If that is the case, that would be absolutely huge.
Yeah, absolutely. But I totally agree with you. You know, having if you're an ISV and you want to provide some of this enterprise management, you sort of have to, you know, pick the pony that's going to lead the race. And at this point in time, it's still too early. Good Dynamics has a good lead in my mind against some of the other vendors in terms of their SDK and their ecosystem. And they've also made some good acquisitions along the way in terms of Copia and that kind of stuff.
So
ease of implementation too.
We didn't even talk about that yet.
So now, don't you think, you know, Citrix, and you know, to also to a degree, Absence, they are the MDM MAM vendors that also their product will be able to hook on the other end in this, you know, whole big world of desktop related management where
that's
your AirWatch, good Mobile Iron, that is not the case. So while you know, especially like AirWatch is growing like crazy, you know, just got another round of funding, is ultimately, could we see a day where like these, you know, the MDM and MAM that's hooked into bigger ecosystems is.
Well, I think what's going to happen with the MDM MAM vendors, and this is certainly subject to debate, but my feeling is there's so many of them out there, there's going to start to be some massive consolidation. And my opinion is a lot of these vendors, you specifically mentioned AirWatch, I think they're just trying to snag as many customers as possible to build a massive customer base so they can become an acquisition target. I'm not saying that they want to be acquired, but if you're in the business of trying to make sure that you're the established dominant player, you're going to do everything you can to onboard as many customers as possible. That funding you're receiving is making sense, and that potentially you can get sold or go public or whatever.
Yeah, what's the exit strategy of the other 48?
Exactly.
It doesn't matter.
You either got to grab customer share, and then you're the leader, or you just get a little sliver like everyone else does.
Look, so many acquisitions in our industry were not based on the revenue, but on the potential revenue, and so getting a huge footprint is
And I got to say, like, from my perspective, Citrix has one of the most complete stories.
Yeah.
Not to say that, oh, look, they got MDM now, that's great, whatever. I mean, the back end
behind
the mobility stuff, serving apps and serving desktops and SaaS-based authentication
deserves,
stuff.
They definitely deserve some kudos there because it is extremely difficult to integrate all these services and all these different things and all these different application models and management models.
Cisco's going to be very happy when they buy them.
So I think they're really doing a good job. If you compare it to VMware, VMware is a very fierce competitor, and Microsoft is in some ways too, but they are very far off.
I think the one thing that Citrix has going to their advantage, and I think it's to the detriment of some of these other vendors, is a lot of these other mobility vendors have gotten so convinced that everything's mobile first, which I don't entirely disagree with, but I don't think we're yet at the inflection point that mobility is just, you know,
that's where the momentum is right now. But still, the reality of enterprise today is good on Windows.
Which is great for Citrix because arguably they're one of the best companies from a legacy perspective to bring all that forward. So I think they've got a really great story.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, good for them.
Well said.
And a good story. And again, it's also where we started the discussion, it's available for download in a couple of months. Yeah. And then I think that's a real big differentiator there.
But the key for Citrix in my mind around the MAM thing is the success of their SDK.
Yeah.
And onboarding ISVs. Like, that single thing will dictate whether this is successful or not.
And this is why at every turn we hear from Citrix saying, if you guys know of any apps, if you know of any ISVs, let us know. We want to talk to them.
So post your suggestions in the chat log.
Yeah.
And a quick plug here, educating the world on
MDM and MAM through upcoming books.
Would you have an idea of which book would educate people on said topic?
Oh, yes. That would be Enterprise Mobility Management, Everything You Need to Know About MDM, MAM, and BYOD.
Do you have any more acronyms in the title?
It's with over 20 acronyms.
It's good SEO.
You a little sticker on the foot, over 20 acronyms?
BrianMadden.com/EMM book. There's a cover there with a sticker, over 20 acronyms.
That's fantastic.
We should have a podcast, a book release podcast. So
yeah.
Jack's book in 60 minutes.
Well, now the problem. So you know,
Jack's coming out party. That would.
This is my first book. It's been a lot of fun. It's been real exciting. I've learned a lot about the process of creating a book, and slipping the release date has been real interesting. And now I'm looking like, okay, I think I'm going to be able to release this just in time for iOS 7 to come out and be.
So you were releasing out there relatively
short.
So now we're looking at end of June.
So that means okay. A week after iOS 7 drops, then we'll have the release date so that I can have it up to date with iOS 7.
It's not bad unless you have to wait long enough to call it the 2014 edition. And then it's bad. So if you wait an extra month to make sure that it's up to date for the rest of the year, that's,
so maybe
that,
like
that's
a, an ebook format that you could like insert in a new chapter and say, everything I said in chapter 6, completely incorrect. What's really going to happen?
Yeah. Well, that's the benefit of naming it the 2013 edition.
Ah,
is that every year, right after, like a month after Worldwide Developer Conference,
I'll mail everybody the iOS 7 supplement.
Yes. That would be good. Because, I'm looking forward to iOS 7. I think it's going to... You know, everyone always accuses Apple of not being enterprise ready, but if you look at what's happened with iOS,
they have deliberately gotten more and more enterprise ready with every release. And so, I don't know what the features would be. I haven't even looked at rumors or anything.
I mean,
if
anything, you could argue Android, from an enterprise perspective, is far behind iOS.
Interesting, though, to have that, what was his name? In
John
Dr. Rhee. Keep it simple.
Yeah. So Jack was on a panel last night at Geek Speak Live. Sean was on that panel. And Dr. Rhee was up there. He's the VP of senior VP of technology for
Enterprise
for
and
Samsung.
R&D.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so they were saying you're going from 400 to 1,000 APIs possible to do management stuff like that. So there is a lot of movement.
Well, Samsung is the only Android vendor that gets enterprise.
Comparing apples and oranges, because we're comparing completely integrated Samsung. A completely vertically integrated stack of Apple versus a wide open open source Android world.
Let's say though, I'm sure Samsung would like to own the completely integrated stack.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be interesting to see what ends up happening with Tizen, if that's actually becomes real or if that's not going to be real.
And then so now they're now we're in a three platform thing, and we're Apple, Samsung, and than all the others.
It could have been Migo too, or
Windows Phone. Come on, Windows Phone. You can say it.
I was gonna tweet. I was really impressed to see Apple, Android, and Windows on that one slide.
Yeah.
With talking about the mobility stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
And HTML5.
Microsoft made it to that slide. That's awesome. Yeah. and then when Receiver was announced for Windows 8, and there was one guy clapping in the audience. Yeah. I was like,
that was Ruben's pride. No, he wasn't clapping.
It was probably Benny Stretch.
It was Benny. Ruben has a Windows Phone.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Wasn't Benny just coming in yesterday talking about how he's gonna get a new an Android phone?
Yes, that's the word on the street.
Man,
he's abandoning the mothership.
We are very slowly turning that vice.
We'll make
one day he's going to show up in the Mac, and we're going to.
He broke down after the torture of several years.
Dr. Rhee yesterday was talking about how open Samsung is, though, with the Knox. What do I call it? Technology. But I wonder still. It's fine if you want to say you're open and that you support more applications and things like that, but when I hear open, I want to hear things like this technology is going to work on all the Android phones. Because it's not any really better than Apple in that you have to be completely dedicated to Samsung.
Jack made a little snarky comment about that. Like, this wouldn't be hard if everyone bought Samsung phones.
Yeah.
The funny thing is
nice
that,
they do.
A lot of analyst people in this industry say there's actually three operating systems out there: Android, Samsung, and Apple.
Apple.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's totally the case.
And that was the comment you made actually, was that it's a different version of Android.
Well, and Apple and Samsung are the number one, number two vendors in terms of worldwide sales
for good
reason, and revenue.
Android phone, asking for Galaxy. Yeah.
But the thing about what Samsung is doing with Safe and Knox is that it's a very, you know, to do what you do, you have really tight control, really deep into the whole device, and that's where, you know, we really need to have that app versus device conversation, which we're there was talk on Twitter about, like, that's what we wanted to get to in the session last night, and we'll have that. We'll get to that conversation one of these days.
Right.
I just think about one last comment about all this different operating system stuff like that. But just like the Citrix receiver for desktop virtualization and Zenap, we'll get into exactly the same discussion when it comes to capabilities of the mobile Zen mobile clients when it comes to different platforms. But for sure, they will be wildly different if you look at the different versions.
That's already true today.
So it's already true today, and it will only get worse, you know, when Windows Phone and stuff like that's happening.
Especially
that's
Android.
That's why when you abstract to the app level, you know, who cares if it's a Android.
Unless you want deeper control than what the app sandbox will provide.
Yeah.
So that becomes the issue.
So the debate is the app sandbox enough control?
Yeah, so we finally got back to that topic. We were 15 minutes ago, we were saying we're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
So my thing is this. I think it depends on what your objectives are. If your company's objective is, we're going to supply the phone, it's not going to be personally supplied, we're going to buy it, we're going to own it, we're going to support it, then MDM makes perfect sense. No argument whatsoever. If it's going to be bring your own technology, bring your own device, then
it's a race you cannot ever win.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always 5-10% that you're not managing.
And so we had a discussion yesterday with Wahid where he says, you know, you can do selective wipe, and a lot of the MDM providers are providing that. It's absolutely true. But selective wipe, in some cases, is not going to provide the corporate owner with enough confidence that the user is not exchanging information between the business and personal environment. So that's not going to satisfy their security concerns, even though it may satisfy the, we can put the full-blown agent there and we're going to control the device and do selective wipe and that kind of stuff. So, I don't know.
Oh, for sure, MAM as a concept is the way to go for a long run, because you just don't want to be, you know, it's always the 5-10%. But the problem with MAM is that capabilities are always different per device and per... So you have MAM,
per
but
OS,
then the...
Per device.
And per OS level.
But that's also true in MDM as well.
Yeah, so it's a catch-22. Yeah, fragmentation.
But so if, you know, for your cheap Android devices or whatever, if you determine that, you know, app-level control is good enough for those devices or for those personal devices, then... If that's good enough for you, then the fact that you can get into a Samsung device and dig around and do all that stuff, you know, that's great, but...
So the one part that didn't come up in our conversation, but we were talking about with Dr. Ri after the session, which wasn't... well, he did mention it in the session, is Samsung is doing a lot of work with ARM Trust Zone, processor, hardware-level attestation, root of trust, all that kind of stuff. And that, in my mind, is really the future for mobile devices, because the problem that you have is, you know, operating systems on mobile phones are going to have vulnerabilities. People are going to exploit it. No matter what level of software sandboxing and all these kinds of device-level controls you do, people will find exploits around those things. The concept behind Trust Zone is a completely separate, isolated environment inside the phone that is only leveraged for trusted
almost
operations.
Almost virtualization.
Yeah, it is virtualization to a degree.
He brought that up in...
He did say it at the tail end. We didn't talk about it much.
Right, Jack gave him his plug. Not for any reason.
Well,
he wasn't
like
owed a plug,
but
Jack was so
session.
Interested in it. So. But he talked about, what I heard when he was talking about that was Bromium-like. Yeah. I mean, he was talking about using microkernel virtualization.
It's trusted execution.
Exactly. Which, holy shit, that's cool.
Well, if you think about it, and I think you're going to see some steps in this direction. I mean, today the world's moving towards you have to do two-factor authentication in order to be able to provide some level of security. People are talking about doing things like, you know, effectively air-gap networks and segmentation with, you know, DAS in one place and then your local desktop, or doing Bromium to try to ensure that if you get compromised, that the things that are important to you, like your data and your commerce transactions and that kind of stuff, is not compromised with it. That's the same idea of trusted execution on a mobile phone, is move the things that are of critical importance outside of the rest of the operating environment so that if that's compromised, the important financial data to you is separated.
I'm sorry, there's a guy that sounds like he's swinging a dead cat around. The garage band. So we're sitting adjacent to an arcade here. There's like this park area, and one of the games that's there is GarageBand, and this is the same guy that tried to sing Jane Says a little bit ago, just like Perry Farrell. So he's not listening right now, so I'm safe in that regard. Hopefully he doesn't listen later. Otherwise, good job, dude.
Okay.
So we're kind of over our hour here.
No, I hadn't noticed that before. Thank you for pointing it out to me, because I kind of tuned it out.
Well actually, I like it, so I'm going to leave this meeting. I'm going to join him.
A duet.
You're going to be the chorus backup?
Oh, yeah. Fly like an eagle. Well, he's doing a seal version. That's why.
I think this is a good way to put a bow on this week's podcast.
Should we get that as a closing music?
Yeah, so we should walk closer up to him and say, okay.
Justin, aim the shotgun mic over that guy. All right.
Well, we got to go before we get into trouble here. All right. So thank you guys both. Jeroen,
I'm so
glad you're hired. You can join us on all future ones if you so desire.
Okay.
And Sean, thanks again for this.
This has been
great. David Safford said best panel keynote recap ever, especially for those watching from afar. So
cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for the shirt advice, by the way, David.
These walls.
I went with the lime green. It was excellent. It went over well.
I will do my movie outro. I'm going to say bye. It's
did I tell you guys I was accused of working for Absence the other day? Someone thought I was wearing that shirt for Absence, my lime green shirt.
I like how the guy came up to you at the panel and said, hi, just want to talk to Sean first and say I really like your shirt.
Yeah, and he's wearing the exact same color shirt. That was fantastic. I've got shirt groupies.
Justin, feel free to just slowly fade us out, because
it will go no.
Now we're just
blurring. I really like the color of the shirt right now.
The official recording will probably cut off before this point.
No, we're good. All right, well, let's say goodbye, everybody.
Oh, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.